right. Thank you, Debbie. Good afternoon, everyone. Today is Thursday, February 8th, 2018. We're going to call to order the Senate Committee on Workforce. You'll notice on the published agenda, our intention was to have a work session on Senate Bill 1534, what we call the Home Care Workers Bill, but we are still waiting on the fiscal. And so we will not be moving that bill, unfortunately, today. But so we'll carry that over till Tuesday. So I apologize for anybody who was waiting on that, but our intention was to move it today. But what we are going to do is have a work session on Senate Bill 1564. So I'm going to go ahead and open up the work session on that.
1546.
Excuse me, did I say it incorrectly? We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1546. Deborah, to summarize the GIP bill, please.
This bill, Senate Bill 1546, allows a judge member of the PERS system who is formerly a member, actually it's their own retirement system, who is formerly a member of OPSERP to apply service credit as a judge member towards hours of service required for vesting in the OPSERP pension program. No amendments.
Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and ask Senator Knoop for a motion, please.
Chair Taylor, I move Senate Bill 1546 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Knoop moves Senate Bill 1546 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Yes, I'm just curious if it seemed to me that there was an issue that the folks in PERS brought up in the testimony. Was that considered? Was it taken in?
Well, we can go ahead and have the I don't want to speak for PERS. Should we go ahead and have Mr. Woodman come up?
That'd be fine. Has the bill changed at all from some of the concerns he brought forward?
It is my understanding, again, the bill has not changed since we were here last week. And no amendments were introduced.
Okay.
Did I just walk up?
You can just go ahead. No, I asked you to come up. Why don't you go ahead and ask your question, please?
Well, you raised concerns about setting a precedent. It seemed to me to be legitimate, and I was kind of concerned about those too. But it wasn't part of any discussion. My question was more, did we have any ability to take into consideration, or did we, what the concerns you were raising?
Chair Taylor, Senator Hansel, for the record, Steve Roadman, the executive director at PERS. No, we haven't. We are not aware of any amendments to the bill to narrow its scope down to perhaps this only affected individuals, such as, for example, saying somebody who is a judge member within this period of time or becomes a judge member within this period of time is the only one affected by the bill. So as it sits, it will affect all judge members going forward. And the main concern I have is the one I expressed about the fact that every month hundreds of people go into loss of membership. And now we have to figure out, and this is what this bill, because it creates this narrow exception, we have to figure out how do we check every one of those hundreds of people every month to see did they go into judge member program, in which case we need to defeat the system's logic and restore their creditable service. So that is still what this bill would make us do.
Madam Chair.
I don't mean to describe that as being good, bad, or indifferent. That is your policy choice to make.
The reality
I'm
of
not
the
trying to throw a monkey wrench in it. I just, their work, I hate for us to, in good intentions, pass something that potentially creates a significant workload for the staff if we can eliminate that by an amendment that would narrow it to this particular one. I think it's worth looking into if we have time to do it. That was my concern.
Okay, well, thank you for bringing up that, Senator Hansel. What I understand is that right now, with your current system, you don't have an alternative to figure this out. Would an amendment solve that? Is there an amendment that could make it easier for you and still accomplish the goal of having this person be able to transfer over?
Chair Taylor, there we haven't had the conversation, but conceivably, if this is, as has been portrayed, to resolve one person, then those circumstances have already happened. So we could narrow the scope of this bill to only that timeframe, which generally narrows the scope of people who are affected by the legislation. But as I don't mean to speak for the judicial department either, but they're trying to set this up as a parallel to Tier 1 and Tier 2, which is a perpetual parallel, not just to solve for this one individual, because in the future there will be others that are in this circumstance. It's almost inevitable. And time frames have been used in the past to try to narrow the application or scope of some specific provision that this legislature has decided to affect a limited number of individuals. I will just tell you, we haven't discussed what that time frame might be or where that might come into play. Question hasn't been asked.
Okay, so let's go ahead and I'm sorry, the gentleman from the judicial department, all of a sudden it's
Bruce
Miller. Mr. Miller, can you come up, please? Thank you. So can you speak to the time frame issue in our conversations?
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Bruce Miller, senior staff counsel to the state court administrator here on behalf of the Oregon Judicial Department. Mr. Ottoman stated the problem as it is, which is we have one judge that we know of now, but it seems inevitable that on occasions we will have people who do not vest an OPSERP, perhaps from the DA's office or perhaps from as a hearings referee in Oregon Judicial Department, and they will then go into Judge Purs, and they will be in the same situation as our current judge, which is that they will lose a benefit for which there's been payment and to which we would like them to continue to have, because the only thing that has happened is that they have gone from one section of the Purs statutes to another.
Mm-hmm.
And I would point out that I have a memo from PERS from November 6th of last year saying that this is a minimal thing to fix from their end, and you have a fiscal impact statement saying that it's minimal. So I can understand that that there may be some programming issues for PERS, but the question becomes, do we force these people to lose their benefit when we didn't do that for people who were in Tier 1 or Tier 2? And set up a disincentive for people who may want to serve on the bench.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Mr. Rodman, can you just explain to me more how it would make it so that it's not so much of a, I want to say, work burden or workload for the PERS without, so we can still accomplish the goal of a person? It seems logical that a person should be able to transfer over to the bench and keep their benefits. But this workload issue, is there something you could?
Chair Taylor, thank you for the opportunity. I don't mean to overstate the workload, and the letter we sent is accurate. This is not.
That's what I was going off of. I was going off of the letter that there was this idea that it was minimal, so I thought there wasn't an issue. So
there's a difference between the fiscal impact and the policy impact. Mm-hmm. The policy impact that I foresee, given my experience, is that we know this is one individual that we are affecting, and the policy decision you can make to grant this one individual a different benefit structure than is available to others. That is your purview. My concern is 10, 15, 20 years from now, when we are still administering OPSERP, when we are still dealing with people coming in and going out of the judge member program, who's going to remember why this one category of employment type gets to continue to accrue hours of service when other employment categories don't? And so I'm trying to preserve, I go back to Senator Canope when he was Representative Canope in 2003, and we were talking about OPSERP being such a simple program and being something contrast with Tier 1 and Tier 2, where it will be so simple to administer because it's just plain vanilla. This is throwing some chocolate chips in. And again, it is your purview to do it. As policy advisors to the legislature, I'm just telling you what the long-term outcome of that can be.
I appreciate that, Mr. Rodman. And I like how you have your little club, the long-standing, and I'm not sure I'm really jealous. I'm not sure I really wanted to be part of that club all this time. But what I'm asking is.
So
what can be done to make it so it's not? Senator Hansel's raised a very valid point, I think, and so I'm trying to see, is there something that can be done?
We
could get an amendment done quickly if there was, but the narrowing the time frame with that,
Madam Chair, the trouble with narrowing the time frame is it does doesn't solve the problem for other people who find themselves in this judge's position. So if we narrow it down and you just include this one judge, then in a year or two, we may have someone else who goes onto the bench who has only had 4 years, like this judge in Opsir, and they will then lose that benefit simply because they've gone from one part of the PERS statute to another, because they won't be able to count that time towards their Opsir.
Okay, I'm sorry, we're doing all this right here on the open, but that's we're going to go ahead and have this quick conversation and just hammer this out here. So, but administratively, you were saying that you would have to review each situation, and that could be quite burdensome.
Madam Chair, what I'm afraid of is not so much the burden of it as the missing of it, and the perpetuation of the lore around. There's this one little exception that now we have to remember for decades because we are a retirement system. This is what we do. And it is these little, if you will, additions to the plain vanilla that make you have Tutti Frutti all of a sudden.
Hold on.
Senator Knope?
Yes. So we were with chocolate chips before. Now we're fruity.
Well, because I don't mean to disparage. I don't mean to overstate. Maybe I should have just shut up. But this is one area of the PERS statutes as has been alluded to, moving to another one. So there's another bill in the House for OHSU security officers who want to have the opportunity to come back into PERS because now they're classified as police and fire. Mm-hmm. That could open the door for there are all kinds of people who make choices and lose something or not going from one phase to another phase. You got university people, you got the judges, you have people who want exceptions to the work after retirement restrictions. One anecdote leads to a policy that then others try to expand. It is just how it has happened in the history of PERS. So trying to illustrate what's going to happen 5, 10, 15 years from now.
All right. So let's just play this out. So let's say we go ahead and we narrow it in for this one particular individual. That doesn't instinctively sound that generally we don't do a lot of that. But so if we were to do that, then what would happen?
Then there's one person we have to keep track of on a special case. Uh-huh. And every time that this person is reported or every time there are hours reported, we have to add those hours in to somehow make sure that the vesting programming that we have is defeated and does not move this person into loss of membership. One person in the population who's a special case.
Okay, and then if we went ahead and passed this bill as is, month-to-month worker,
I don't know then who else is going to come along at whatever point down the future and fall into these special circumstances that this bill would create. I don't know how to track that. It's much easier to follow one individual than it is to wait for the next one when you don't know when they're coming.
Okay. Question, yes, what, Senator Knope.
Did you have something?
No.
Steve, you mentioned other classes. And I mean, I don't know any other class that is going to be able to be an Opsir and then switch to another system.
The universities, if I may, Madam Chair, the universities have their own optional retirement program. So OHSU or any of the state universities have choice as well. And move and upon leaving Opsir employment to go to one of those, you could be faced with the same sort of dilemma. If I go into this other program, I'm going to lose my Opsir.
Okay. I just don't, if we narrow the bill, we're going to need another bill eventually for other people. And I don't think that's a good way to go because, we don't know who these people are. I think if we're going to do it, I think we need to do it for everyone who's going to be moving from OBSERP to what I call JPERS. I don't know what you guys call it.
We call it the judge program. Actually, adding PERS into the name is something relatively new for us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, let's just go ahead and have a little brief. Thank you both. Let's have a brief recess for one minute. It seems that, at least I don't really feel comfortable passing, stopping having the bill amended, and then to pass it just for one person. It's just is generally something that I doesn't seem like one of those circumstances. I know we do make those exceptions sometimes. Unless I'm missing something, which I don't think that I am, that this is not going to occur that often. There may be other scenarios where people are moving in between programs at a higher rate, but it doesn't seem that this is going to be one of those circumstances. What do you have something to add, Senator Knopf?
Could we go to work session?
We are in work session.
Are we?
Yeah.
Awesome.
We're in discussion right now.
You made the motion.
Hey, I wasn't paying attention when I made the motion.
Uh-oh.
I feel the same as the chair, that I don't think we can do this just for one person, because we're going to need another bill in another session. I don't think that's the way to legislate. I think it is, you know, it'll be a little more complicated for PERS. As Steve Rodman said, that's adding some chocolate chips to it. Personally, I like chocolate chips, but I can't have chocolate chips. So I'm going to go with the fruit instead. But I think we should pass this bill, and I think we need to be quite skeptical of other institutions who might want to come forward with a similar ask. I think the case can be made that it is very difficult to recruit judges, where in other sectors, I don't think there is the difficulty that exists, and I think some of that has to do with pay and workload of what's currently in the system for judges. And so I am comfortable moving the bill as is.
So again, we're in discussion, so this is the time to go ahead and to chime in. I also have to thank you, Senator Hansel, for shining additional light on this. I was just a committee member, so you know, is that I was going off of this letter, and I take responsibility for perhaps not interpreting it the same way as to, I looked at it as that this was not going to be a big shift because it would impact such a small number of people. So just so people understand what my reasoning was. Senator Mona Sanderson.
Yeah, I don't like taking away incentives from people who have started in a retirement program and then would lose that. I tend to agree that I don't think there's going to be that many people. My situation is different. I worked for Multnomah County for 2.5 years, but I didn't have to go to another statute as a public health nurse when I went and worked for Clackamas County for the next 17 years. I was able to keep the 2.5 years I acquired from Multnomah County to Clackamas County, but I wasn't going into another part of the statute. I was still within the same statute. So. I would agree that I would like to keep the bill as is.
So, Senator Gelser, do you have anything you wanted to add? Okay, all right. So, I'm going to conclude on discussion.
May I just say?
Yes, go ahead, please, Senator Gelser.
I'll go along with the leadership and also want to highlight what Vice Chair said, that I don't want to set this as a precedent for other things. I want to reserve the right to be able to judge them appropriately, in my opinion, as they move forward. So that's where I'm
okay,
at.
Okay, now I think that's a, thank you, Senator Hansel. I think that is a very, very important distinction. We have PERS is complex. There's all these different facets, and the PERS agency has a tremendous amount of responsibility, and I understand why. It's more clear now why this is yet another layer of many layers that have been added on over the years, but then we have to look at from the other perspective of what the impact would be if we did not do this. And I do think, definitely agree with Senator Canope that we do have a problem here in Oregon of recruiting judges, retaining judges. We don't pay judges as well as we should, and then this is the retirement, and to not respect the work that they've done and then to go to the bench and not keep it going is not a really a very solid, clear message. At least I don't want to portray. So unless there's any other discussion, anything else anybody wants to add? And then are there any objections to the bill? Seeing none, the motion passes. And I guess I... Yes, right. Thank you. I was just thinking about the carrier. And so I know that I'm looking around, and I think that's going to be me. So I will go ahead and assign myself to be the carrier, and we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1546. Now we are going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1566. Again, this is PERS. This is a different bill, going back to the PERS bill that we did on, that we've talked about on Tuesday when the governor came and testified. So that's, as a reminder to the committee folks here, that's what we're going to talk about. Deborah is going to give a little more of a brief summary this time. And then we'll have, we have some witnesses up here to testify, and we have some other people. Thank you so much. And let's go ahead and have a brief summary of the bill.
Okay, SB 1566 addresses the unfunded actuarial liability of PERS by creating an employer incentive fund and directing contributions from multiple sources to side accounts to school districts, community colleges, and public universities. It also directs the state treasurer to study the option of reinvesting certain treasury short-term dollars. The Dash 1 amendment clarifies eligibility for the employer incentive fund. It moves the dates of calculation forward on some of the proceeds. It changes how proceeds from unclaimed property will be transferred. And there is a Dash 2 amendment that removes the tax amnesty program.
Okay, so let's go ahead and have Rob Bovet and Scott Winkles come up, please. And I don't see. Are you...
No.
Are you?
Mr. Bovet asked me to echo that, asked me to express AOC support as well. He's tied up on another bill.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and say for the record who you are? And I don't know, sure. I haven't had that one before. Colleagues, do we allow that? Do we allow one lobbyist to speak for the other? Is that okay? I don't know. We'll go ahead and trust you then.
I'll
give it a shot. We'll see if he comes back later and objects to anything you say. So,
I have, Chair Taylor, for the record, Scott Winkles representing the League of Oregon Cities. I do have the Tex-Mex message, which I could enter into the record if you wish.
Okay.
I'm appearing.
You're also speaking on behalf of.
Yes, and Rob Bovet, Mr. Bovet from Association of Oregon Counties, indicated that he would like me to express the AOC support as well.
Okay, great.
Scott Winkles representing the League of Oregon Cities appearing in support of Senate Bill 1566. We do appreciate that the recognition that the PERS rate is in fact a state mandate and the establishment of a matching fund to assist local governments in paying down that obligation is much appreciated. Additionally, I would also call your attention in the Dash 1s, there's some language that corrects the what we viewed as a technical issue in terms of the timing of the marijuana diversion into the side account. Under the Dash 1s, it is our reading that the marijuana money would be diverted after the distribution to the cities and the counties as well, and we support that change. That's a very volatile marketplace, and it's doing a lot of ups and downs, and it hasn't smoothed out, and the projections are somewhat tend to come in lower than what we're actually experiencing by large amounts. That is what it is in terms of that marketplace. This bill is a good first step. We believe we have much more to do on this matter, but we should build the fund, establish the fund, and then begin quickly working on ways to capitalize it and addressing other ways to get efficiencies and address the PERS issue.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Winkle? Okay, thank you. so much. Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay, let's go ahead and have Chuck Bennett and Hasina come forward, please. And might as well have Edith. Is it say push? I can't read. Push. Sorry, why don't you come forward? You can go ahead and come up too if you want, or you can wait, whichever you prefer. Up to you. Who would like to go first? Hello, Hasina,
hello.
How are you?
Hi, good afternoon, members of the committee. For the record, Hasina Wittenberg on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. Our association consists of about 900 plus members, ranging from different types of services, single service providers, water, sewer, fire, irrigation, ports, and I'd say about 250 roughly special districts participate in the PERS program. I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 1566. And would just encourage you to do everything you can to get that 25% matching fund established and moving forward. It's a gift. Our membership thinks of it as a gift that the legislature is giving to us. If we put money in, you put some in. We'd rather see it 50-50, but we'll take whatever we can get, 10%, 5%, 25%. Most of our special districts that will qualify under that 200% of payroll initial group that will get to go into the 25% match belong to the state and local government rate pool. And by my calculation, we have 92 members that are actually in that. So in that first initial 200 chunk, and then people who are not in the pool, entities not in the pool, 16 of those. And I really would like to thank Marjorie Taylor from PERS for providing us with every bit of information we've ever asked for on people's rates and their UAL as a percentage of payroll. And so we're looking at about 100 potential entities that will qualify under that first initial 200%. Premium that gets to get into the program first. So we appreciate your support for this program and would like you to pass it as quickly as possible.
Okay, great. Thank you. Why don't you go ahead? Yeah.
Senator Taylor, members of the Workforce Committee, I'm Edith Roush, and I'm a volunteer with Tax Fairness Oregon. And I just wanted to respond, Senator Taylor, to your concern that nobody was here to testify on Tuesday. So I went right home and spent quite a number of hours preparing something.
Okay,
so
all right. Well, thank you. Well, welcome. Thank you for coming.
We are definitely in favor of Senate Bill 1566 and the Dash 1 Amendment. I actually read the report from the Governor's Task Force, and with all of the information that was in there that detailed the reasoning behind the choices they made and the choices they didn't make, I came away thinking that we really do have some thoughtful and courageous Oregonians who are willing to take on a contentious issue like this. And having sat through all the hearings last year, you all are well aware of how contentious it got at some points in time. One of the other things I read in relation to this, which was much less interesting than the Governor's Task Force report, was a Blue Ribbon panel report done by the Society of Actuaries. And the thing that they talked about there is that the primary goal of any public pension plan should be adequate funding. And in their definition, adequacy means that the sponsor should have the resilience and flexibility to respond to conditions significantly more or significantly less favorable than expected. And that notion of what you can expect is something that when it comes to public pension plans, you're always going to have mood swings when it comes to the economy. So how that pension plan is actually set up and the flexibility that you have to respond to these things is what makes it a very stable plan. Basically, Tax Fairness Oregon believes that the effort made with Senate Bill 1566 will benefit all Oregonians. It isn't just the PERS members, because by reducing finding any found money that reduces this unfunded liability, you affect budget flexibility for police and firefighters, for libraries, for road crews, and of course our schools. And 1566 is a step in that direction. So we really appreciate. One less recognized aspect of the task force's work that was presented by Alana the first when she did the PowerPoint 2 weeks ago is the carefully scaffolded three-year plan, many of the pieces that went into place already last year, that really addresses changes to employer financial processes, administrative practices, investment policies, and employer contributions. TFO observed that the plan responded to one of our criteria for changing PERS, and that was the changes should support, value, and respect our public servants. And we believe by building a scaffolding of that over a number of years, you have the opportunity to do that. Drastic legislation on some key issues sometimes can create barriers that we no longer know how to get over. So anyway, I want to point out just a couple of things. There's printed testimony. I'm not going to go through all of it. But I think one of the things that is a positive that as this bill goes forward, what are the messages you carry with you to help people understand why this is an important thing to take place? One of the strengths of the Oregon plan is that our annual retired contribution, which they call ARC, I learned words I never knew I was going to know. Basically, our ARC is always funded in this state. The systems that have the most trouble, such as Illinois, Kentucky, New Jersey, have neglected their ARC for decades. We're a large pension plan, over 800 members, and each member's ARCs are adjusted every single year to meet the costs. So if that unfunded liability increases, every employer that belongs to the plan sees an increase. So, for instance, in Corvallis, right now, the OPSERP members only, the teachers, 9% of their payroll goes into paying benefits. That will increase in the next biennium to 16.75%. Gresham, in this biennium, is paying 8.5% for payroll members. For payroll for teachers. That will increase to 15% for the school districts. The city of Joseph, actually, their police and fire right now, they are paying 21% of their payroll for benefits just for OPSERP members. That will increase to 26% in the next biennium. So that's what happens with an unfunded liability. So anyway, basically what's happening with these infusions is that small amounts of money reduces that actual amount of payroll for those types of entities that they're talking about. And that is a reason why this is such a good. OPSERD is basically a solids plan. As we looked at many, many states, the adjustments that were made in 2003, once that is the only plan in the state of Oregon, we'll have a very good solid plan. It offers reasonable retirement benefits supplemented by Social Security. However, the IAP portion of the plan is the one reason that PERS is underfunded, because when you switch to defined contributions, you automatically go through a period of time that does increase the underfunded liability. The other thing we observed as we studied this last year and as we look at some of the changes that have been made over the last few months, the PERS board and the PERS system are using industry's best standards. Many of those match the best funded public pension systems in the nation. The current changes to the expected rate of return and the revised mortality rates basically confirm those views. They also have done things to change the investment costs. Just a final thought, as this goes forward, one of the other things that Tax Fairness Oregon is following are all of the changes of the connection of the federal tax law to Oregon's tax law. So you are going to be sitting on multiple committees where they're going to be talking about found dollars because of changes in tax law. It does offer a challenge or opportunity, however you want to see it, for Oregon lawmakers to develop a more balanced tax structure that supports the fundamental public systems that are a foundation of our state. We implore you to take up the challenge, and we also will have your back. So thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Mr. Bennett.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. Just here to support Senate Bill 1566. We see it as a real opportunity for the individual districts to work on their own PERS unfunded liability. The program certainly, as we see it, was certainly geared heavily for K-12 under this bill, and we're very pleased with that, of course. We've also have one area that we have been working with the governor's office on. Hopefully we'll be coming to you through that office with some amendments. And that's the area on page 9 dealing with unclaimed proceeds from unclaimed property and their impact on the common school fund. That's an area that we are very interested in. We've spent session after session trying to protect it from any kind of long-term losses. We believe we're well on our way toward amendments that will limit any kind of long-term impact on the Common School Fund. This, as you'll recall, is a fund that arrived with statehood that it was based early on land. It has changed. It's now based on equities. If it had remained based on land and we hadn't sold all that land at a dollar an acre, we would not be talking to you about how poorly funded our schools are. So this generation is looking very closely at what's going to happen in 75 to 100 years using the Common School Fund that is really growing well in the current marketplace where it's invested. And we try very hard to maintain funds going into that. And we think that the amendments that are being developed will protect that fund in the unclaimed property area. There are other funding areas that play along with that. So we'll keep track of it.
Okay.
Thank you.
So any questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
So that is everybody who signed up to testify. We are not, Senator Miles Sanderson.
Can I just ask a general question?
Yes, sure.
I need clarification. On when we create the employer incentive fund, the money, the 25 cents on the dollar match comes from the state. Where in our budget where is that money going to come from these side accounts? I mean, I just need to have that clarified.
Thank you for the question. I'm going to have Alana come up and she will explain that. Thank you for being here. You just appeared, which was fantastic.
Chair Taylor, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ilana Pertle-Guinney. I'm here on behalf of the governor. I had a feeling it might be helpful if I was in the room.
You heard the question?
I did. Chair, Senator Mona Sanderson, the Senate Bill 1566 doesn't fund or doesn't capitalize that fund. We are creating the fund with the hopes that we will then spend the next little bit of time working with you all in the legislature to figure out the best way to capitalize it. There were a number of potential means for capitalization that we had pondered leading up to the legislative session, but we didn't feel that the six-week session would give us enough time to work through those with you, given the extent of dollars we were talking about. But we do plan to work with you moving forward to find the best way to use some of our state funds to capitalize that, the employer incentive fund.
Okay, so, I mean, it could be nothing. I forget, I think one senator says it's like pulling change from the couch, compared to the huge problem that we have. But I'm very interested in, you know, we create the fund, but it is possible that we won't have a way to provide that match for a while until you're able to figure out where that money's gonna come from. Is that?
Chair Taylor, Senator Ronna Sanderson, that is possible. That is one of the reasons that in the bill we leave until the end of 2019 for employers to come up with their part of the matching fund, because that gives us time to get money into the employer incentive fund and then work with those employers.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So, no, this is not scheduled, as you can see, for a work session, and we're going to go ahead and have a fiscal done on this. And just to remind folks, this is the result of the task force that the governor convened. A lot of options have been considered. A lot of options have been eliminated. A lot of things have, in the drafting of the bill, as I understand it from the governor's office, a lot of things were already taken out. And so this is where we're at. And I will just speak for myself. It would be nice if there was, you know, we could have some additional money, but we are low on funds here in the great state of Oregon. But I commend the governor's office for taking some concrete steps to create something to get going, because we do need to address the UAL. So the idea is to go ahead and move the bill on Tuesday. We'll have, hopefully have the fiscal by then. You were going to say something else, Senator Monasanderson.
And I like the comment that someone said, we have a debt. And before we create new programs, et cetera, because, you know, there's always demands on wanting things for our own community, but we do have a debt that we need to be addressing, and this is one small step in going down that road to paying off our debt. Thank you.
Okay, so committee members, if there's additional questions that you have, please let me know, let's kind of work through if there is anything you want to have clarified on Senate Bill 1566, because the idea is to, assuming all the paperwork is in order, that we would go ahead and move it on Tuesday. And the bill would go for clarification to Ways and Means, and then it would enjoy the Ways and Means process, as all bills like this do. And then after that, there would be a decision. If it comes out, of course, then it would go to the floor. So that is where we're at. Okay, so we'll go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1566. The next meeting is going to be next Tuesday, February 13th, and we're going to go ahead and adjourn the Senate Committee on Workforce.